Today's talk is a continuation of the subject from last week, in which I was talking about assumptions that I have regarding the idea of living to be 120 and healthy. I think it's important that other people identify your own assumptions, because those things will either support you living to be a ripe old age and healthy at the same time, or just the opposite. Today's focus is on my mental assumptions, so maybe you could do the same thing. Consider some of these and then do your own. Everything grows, and if it's not growing, it doesn't have what we would consider to be life. And some people, of course, when they stop growing, start to decline, and they are less and less filled with life. So everything grows, including our minds. And I would consider our minds to be equal to our awareness, equal to our consciousness, equal to our understanding. So clearly that grows over the course of our lives, and not just in a classroom. I mean, we get educated and we learn 2 plus 2 and the alphabet and things like that. But I'm talking about learning how life works. That's not really done justice in our educational system. If we understood more how life works, we would be able to manage ourselves better, and we would be less fearful, less controlling of others, and maybe this is the problem, we would be less eager to be controlled by other people. It seems to me that life is more predictable than we realize. And to do that, I've made up rules about it. And one rule that I use, and I have found it to be true in every circumstance that I considered it, and this is the idea that everyone acts in their own self-interest according to their level of awareness. So that means you do it, and I do it, and everybody you and I know will also do it. They act in their own self-interest according to their level of awareness. Now, it's easy enough to know that some people have a lower level of awareness, and maybe their actions to meet their own self-interest can be cruder, more primitive, even crueler than others who are more aware of our interconnectedness. Said another word way, I would say this rule applies to primitive people. It applies to cave people, it applies to saints and highly evolved people. The only difference is, of course, is that we have a different level of awareness and we recognize what it is, or we don't recognize what it is going on around us. Some people have no understanding of the feelings of other people. They are completely devoid of compassion or sensitivity to the needs and feelings of other people. Now, you don't want to be around a person like that, and you don't want to be a person like that. But if you understand that there are people like that, now it's a question of how do you handle it? You raise your level of awareness. And when you perceive a person like that who is not going to operate according to, I'll say, standard rules of human behavior, kindness, consideration, fairness, justice, you want to put some distance between you and that person. I love this idea of mindset. In Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, in one of the first couple of letters, Christ refers to mindset and attitude as being unbelievably important to the way we create our lives. Searching on mindset, after being turned on to this idea by my future daughter-in-law, I looked at it and found a few wonderful sources. Brené Brown, B-R-E-N-E, Brown. You can find her on YouTube and TED Talks. You can find her books on Amazon. And Mindset, The New Psychology of Success by Carol Dweck. Carol's last name is D-W-E-C-K. Both of these women have written great stuff on it. And throw in The Upside of Stress by Kelly McGonigal. I think the sub headline is something like How to Get Good at Stress and Recognizing Its Value. So to be able to look at all of this stuff puts us into a growth mindset, which says in every situation that we're faced with, we can look at it as a learning opportunity. We're more interested in growing our understanding, our awareness, as compared to somebody with a fixed mindset. That fixed mindset is, if you've made a decision that somewhere along the line, I wasn't born with X, game over, that's a fixed mindset. A growth mindset was, well, I may not have been born with X, but I could develop it if I'm interested. All I have to do is work at it, understand it, practice it, maybe get somebody to mentor me in it, but I can grow and learn and perform efficiently in X. That's huge. There's a huge difference there. If you want to be a success, you're going to want to have a growth mindset. So understanding that and being able to shift from that fixed mindset into a growth mindset is going to be really, really important to you. And when you understand the difference and you see how it operates in your life in that Carol Dweck book, she does a fantastic job of giving real-life examples, and you go, oh, I do that, oh, I do that, and how it was shifted with the people that she's addressing in the book. Very cool, very cool. A lot of people have a feeling that obedience and fitting in and belonging, and those are normal social needs that we have. We do want to belong. It's a survival instinct that causes us to belong, and it helps us to stay alive and to learn and to grow if we have somebody to play with. So families, tribes, communities, you know, affinity groups, affiliations, all that stuff is really designed to give us people to play with. And as we play, we grow and learn how to interact. We learn more about life and the rules that do apply. And in social settings, we obey certain rules. One of the reasons years ago I liked learning how to play golf was because it had rules. I knew what to do in order to follow the rules. It was like, oh, here's golf etiquette. You do this, you do that. You don't do this, and you don't do that. It's like, oh, okay, I know how to play the game now. Now that I know that, and that's really what they're really designed to do, right? I mean, rules are designed to help us avoid pain, suffering. Now, there's not going to be that much pain and suffering on a golf course. Maybe embarrassment, humiliation, or rejection because people don't want to play with you because you violated rules on the golf course, stepping on people's lines when they're on the green, trying to putt, and so on. So we have these rules because it makes things more efficient socially and politically and a lot of different other ways. So if you think of it, next time you go out, you just, it's amazing. I drove a long distance today, and there are lines on the highway. Oh, dividers. And there are lanes. Oh, and there are signs talking about speed limits. Oh, and on the side roads, there are stop signs and stoplights. Oh, all of that are, they're like rules that are designed to reduce pain, suffering, and chaos when people are driving cars. And you go, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. So now you'd say, I'll follow the rules that make that kind of sense. And, of course, not all rules do that. A lot of people are in prison for rules that don't make any sense. Cannabis is being legalized around the country in various forms, and still, in other parts of the country, people are being arrested for cannabis. So they're going to prison for cannabis, where in another state it's permitted to use it, even recreationally, not just medicinally. And you go, those rules don't make any sense. I mean, if it's so terrible, and they've not been able to prove that those political rules were instituted to protect somebody else's financial holdings. So lots of people's lives got ruined by rules that were implemented for the benefit of just a few people. That's a problem. It seems to me that we need to make up our own rules as we go along. Now, you're not going to want to drive 80 miles an hour through a school zone where it says go 15. But when you're trying to decide what to do and what not to do, you can use your own rules, and they ought to be based upon values. You go, And if you understand one rule, the law of cause and effect, we reap what we sow, then it's like, okay, my rules have got to wisely take into consideration the idea that I'm going to reap what I sow. So I'm not going to be an anarchist. I'm not going to be cruel. I'm not going to be a psychopath or a sociopath, because that's going to come back to me. And it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good if you're a normal person. I guess maybe a psychopath and a sociopath. So, yeah, it does feel good. We don't want to follow their rules. But if you're making up your own rules, is a way of taking on responsibility and taking on power and freedom to, like, let me consider this. Let me evaluate this. Let me challenge this rule. Let me walk through it to see if it really is valid in the first place. That's a good thing to do. It's a good thing to do. Because, of course, it's empowering, and it keeps us from being lemmings and going off the cliff following somebody else, like James Jones in Jonestown in Guyana. Drink the Kool-Aid, drink the Kool-Aid. I don't think so. A lot of people believed in him, and a lot of people believe beliefs are somehow really, really significant. They are significant to the individual that holds them, but beliefs are made up. Just because we made them up doesn't mean they're true, and doesn't mean they're useful. If you believe things that are not true, then you go, gee, I'm having struggles, I'm having difficulty in life. Somehow my navigational system is off, or the world is against me, or God is punishing me, or I have bad luck. It's like, maybe your beliefs are not valid. And if you hold on to those beliefs and use them to navigate in life and they're not serving you, we're disadvantaging ourselves mentally. It's like, let me reevaluate. Let me look at my beliefs. That's a good idea. But it takes courage. You need to be courageous enough to create your own rules, not just follow others. You got to be courageous enough to evaluate what you believe to be true about other people, about yourself. That's where there's a whole huge conglomeration of false ideas about you. Your beliefs about God need to be reconsidered. Because this all represents this mental growth that I think is absolutely essential to us. It's my assumption that we can learn how life works. What you knew about God when you were 5 years old or 10 years old or 15 years old is probably not valid today. But a lot of people go, I learned at 10 this was this way, and I never questioned it. I never evaluated it. I never considered that there was another possibility. Well, if you're willing to live your life according to 10-year-old beliefs, or beliefs that belong with a 10-year-old, that's totally up to you. I think it doesn't make sense, because mentally we grow, and our beliefs in God should be growing accordingly. People, that's my belief. That's my belief. Yeah, well, I got news for you. Reality doesn't care about your rules. Reality doesn't care about our beliefs. Reality is only reality. So what does that mean to us? Well, I got a belief that, the Earth was flat. a lot of people had that belief, that the sun revolves around the earth. A lot of people had that belief. There's global warming or not global warming. A lot of people have those beliefs. So you have to consider it for yourself and keep observing, learning, and adjusting. And you go, oh, my reality was this. Whoop, that didn't hold true. Let me try again. Didn't hold true. Maybe my reality needs some changing. Maybe what I believe about a given situation or a person or myself is not valid. Maybe I need to adjust that. That's part of growth. That growing doesn't just occur in a classroom. Frankly, I heard this horrifying comment once. Somebody, I think maybe in my high school class, said, couldn't wait to graduate from high school so he could stop learning. Like it was a real burden to learn. Like, wow. I thought it was fun to learn. I thought it was exciting to learn. I thought it was interesting to learn. And he was trying to avoid the learning. Maybe because he had bad feelings about himself as a learner. That's a mindset issue. He's believing lies. So what do we really want to learn? Well, one thing is we want to learn about ourselves. Aristotle said, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. He said that a long time ago. Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. So how are you going to know yourself if you don't observe yourself? You don't notice how you think and feel and speak and act in given situations. You don't know, if you don't know how you react to other people, if you don't know how you feel when you consider taking on a project or undertaking an action that you haven't done before. It is that observation of self, being aware of what is going on internally with our thoughts and our minds, all that monkey chatter, our feelings, what's happening in our body as a result of this processing. And then we can, I'm starting to know this about myself. I'm starting to know that about myself. That's hugely important. Hugely important. And then you can notice that, I got a fixed mindset showing up in that environment or in that context, and I'm growth and mindset over here and over there. But we can adjust those once we understand it. That's why we keep observing, learning, and adjusting. And as we do, our ability to move in the world is going to be enhanced. Why? Because, maybe I'll put it this way, we won't have rough edges. We won't have such resistance. We won't have such defensiveness. Why? Because we feel pretty effective at life. We have an understanding of how to move around, how to be with people, how to be without people, how to talk to people, how to listen to people. And as we do that, a lot of things in life get easier, get more fun, get more successful. And of course, the bottom line of this is we get healthier because we're not so rejecting. We're letting go of what no longer serves us, and we're allowing in energy patterns that we can process, we can observe, we can consider, and we can learn from, and we can let go if they don't serve us, and that we prove them to be not valid. We release them and continue that process. A lot of people, myself included, will watch sports. If you turn on TV and pretty much any weekend, you'll see all kinds of sports. I think there's a college baseball series going on, and women's softball, and professional baseball, and professional basketball, and all kinds of stuff going on. If you're going to play the game of life, much like any one of those athletes, you're going to want to know the rules that pertain to that particular activity. What rules pertain to life? that's what we want to do. And because we're a player, we're not a spectator, ideally we're not a spectator, we're going to turn around and go, oh, okay, if I'm a participant, an active participant in the game of life, these are the rules that I'm going to obey. This is these are the factors that will influence my play, and I have to pay attention to them. And I noticed this more lately than ever. This idea of vulnerability. That vulnerability is going to cause us to slow down, to go into self-protection, to resist, to maybe even withdraw, maybe fight, and maybe run away entirely. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a challenge. So now, instead of participating fully in the game of life, now we just put our brakes on because we felt vulnerable. Because I'm talking about the mental world out of the 12 worlds, you need to know that the vulnerability that we feel was thought up by our minds. And it affects our bodies, and it affects our emotion, and I'll talk more about that when I get to emotional world. But we thought it up. I'm vulnerable. I feel like I'm at the mercy of, and maybe I can't, or I shouldn't, or nobody will like me, or all kinds of variations of that idea. So we're going to want to really deal with that, how we feel. And you can pretty much look at any kind of activity that you want to do. Get out of bed, make breakfast, mow the lawn, any number of things. Start a business. When we have that idea, all of a sudden, our vulnerability to one degree or another is going to be activated. And if it's activated more than our desire, right? If your desire is 0 to 10 is like a 4, and your vulnerability is at an 8, guess what you're not going to do? You're not going to do that activity. You're not going to be a vibrational match. You're like, ooh. And you'll be a vibrational match to put on your brakes. Stop doing it. Don't advance. Procrastinate. Withdraw. Run away. Distract yourself or something similar. You go, wow. This is the area that we really have to pay attention to. You can look at all the things that you want to do, and if you could muscle test your level of vulnerability relative to them and your relative desire, your relative faith, your relative will, and your relative purpose regarding those, you would have a pretty good insight into whether you're going to do that or not. And if you're not going to do that, then you have to make a determination. Do I want to heal my sense of vulnerability on this subject? Or do I want to say, nope, I'm going to listen and not do it? If this was your goal was to climb Mount Everest and you're 80 years old, you might like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to listen to the vulnerability that I'm feeling that says, this is not a good idea. Don't do this. The fact that everything is electromagnetic, I think that's one of the ways I ended last week. And it pays to reiterate that, and it pays to do it frequently. Everything is electromagnetic. Our thinking is electromagnetic, which means it's creative. Our thinking is creative. So, it's magnetic, it's creative. What we put our attention on and the feelings that we have are going to draw it to us. If we can understand that, and you could also notice this when you put your attention on any project or any activity that you want to do, and you're like, okay, how strong is my desire to be a vibrational match to that? Another way of saying it, How strong is my desire to bond with that activity? And how strong is my desire to protect myself from it, or to reject it, or push it away? Not all desires need to be acted upon. In fact, probably more not than those that are. But if there's something really important to you, really important to your what you believe to be your purpose in life, and you recognize, like, wow, I am not a vibrational match to that. Well, guess what? Guess what? The growth mindset says you can become a vibrational match to anything that's important to you. All it takes is a determination to do it and work and practice and release whatever is trying to coax you in the opposite direction. You know, fear, uh-oh, we'll be vulnerable. We never did this before. This is new. What will they think? You know, that sort of thing. If we can understand that and recognize it, we're going to be so much further ahead on our own journey. We're going to be, oh, wow, I have so much less resistance. I feel like I'm, when I walk and when I act and when I think and speak, it's like so elegant, so streamlined, so resistance-free, so fun. That's where we want to be. I mentioned the idea of having a mentor. Mentors can help us grow. Presumably, they've already walked the path that we're trying to walk. And they've acquired some additional understanding already, having been there. You know, it's like somebody went ahead and scouted territory for us, then comes back and said, oh, okay, you need to make some adjustments. You need to wear winter clothing and this kind of shoe and this kind of hat and take these amount of provisions and so on. You go, oh, okay. We wouldn't argue with those people right off the bat. We would understand that they have a little more awareness having traveled that path already. And if we can understand how the human ego, which is kind of like a mentor, not the best one, that is going to be impacting us and other people. So if there's this invisible conversation going on between your ego and you, it pays to understand how that impacts you and how you tend to listen to it. And those four driving needs that Christ talks about in Christ Returns reveal startling truth. Very clear examples. And you'd say, wow, I can really, really feel that I go into my ego in this context, or with this person, or when the subject is X. You go, And when we understand, and that's part of knowing us, when we understand how the ego is influencing us, if sometimes even controlling us, you go like, no. I think I need to manage my ego. I don't need to be managed by it. And then you turn around and notice other people who are either managing their egos or being managed by their egos. And that gives you a different understanding, a different level of awareness. It's almost like a super skill, if you will, like Superman would have, to be able to know, almost like being able to read somebody's mind, that, oh, this person is going to do anything to get what they want. They will lie, cheat, and steal. They'll do and say anything. You go, okay, I think I've got to increase the distance between me and that person. And all this understanding that we can get about the ego is kind of like understanding the software. This maybe is in ROM, right? Because all of us have this kind of program, those four driving needs. And it's like, is it overriding our common sense, or is it in fact being managed by us, by our own conscious decisions? That would be good. Learning about the ego and its influence on us and other people is growing. It's growing. It's like, oh, wow, I'm taking in this energy and I'm processing it, and that results in growth of awareness. Growth of awareness. So mentally, we're sharper, we're more present, we process better. All of it is good news. I don't know why. Well, yes, I do. I was going to say, I don't know why somebody would refuse to learn. Because refusing to learn is akin to choosing to get onto a death spiral. But I do know why people choose not to learn. For a variety of reasons. One that comes to mind is because they don't think they have what it takes. They believe the fixed mindset pertains to them. Well, I didn't know nuclear physics when I was born, so I can't possibly learn it. I wasn't gifted with nuclear physics awareness. No one else was either. But somebody with a fixed mindset sees it like that. If I wasn't born with it, don't have it. If I didn't get it at birth, I don't have it. End of story. So that's kind of goofy. But another reason people don't want to learn is because they're afraid. They're afraid of what they're going to learn. Years ago, I used to do automatic writing in California. People would come to the house and we'd do group sessions. I taught people how to do it and so on. But it's what was obvious to me is women were eager to know more, and men would, on a regular basis, say, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know more. What if it's bad news? That's kind of like knowing there's a traffic jam on the highway before you set out. That may be bad news for the people who are stuck in the traffic, but knowing that the traffic jam is there says, well, you know what, I'm going to take a different route. I'm going to go on another road entirely. I'm going to avoid it. So that awareness was beneficial. It wasn't harmful. It didn't make us feel bad about ourselves. But I noticed men had a tendency to think of it like that. I don't want to know. It's going to make me feel bad about me. Doesn't have to. Doesn't have to. It's almost, again, like the fixed mindset says, I don't want to know my flaw. Don't tell me my flaw. And the growth mindset was, that if it's a flaw, it's just temporary. It's just a lack of awareness. We can learn. We can overcome it. We can fix it. We can gather more information and we can grow, and then it's not a flaw. Easy enough. Mentally, with this increased awareness, guess what we're going to do? We're going to be able to process information better. We're going to be able to process environmental signals better. Things we see, hear, smell, taste, touch. Five senses, right? We're going to be able to process them more effectively. We won't jump to conclusion. I thought you meant this world was coming to an end. I thought that meant something was wrong with me. No. We could process this more effectively. And again, because of this increased awareness, when somebody says something, we can consider the source. My mother gave me that advice when I was a kid. I said, so-and-so said something about consider the source. It's like, oh. Well, today I would say, consider the source. If their ego or their fear or their greed was triggering them, you're not getting valid information. If they're acting in their own self-interest, What you want to do is to become aware of their level of awareness, their consciousness. And then you know the degree to which you need to protect yourself or engage with them or withdraw from them. You go, oh, that's really, really true. I'm not suggesting that we reject people out of hand, because it pays to observe, learn, and adjust, as compared to, I don't like that. I don't like him. I don't like those. I don't like. A lot of people are very quick to hit that I don't like button. And that rejection does not serve us. The trouble is, it penetrates the body and it starts to interfere with cellular communication. And when your cells don't communicate, and nerves don't communicate, and brains and body don't communicate, you're like, not only am I messing up my mind, mentally I'm being degraded, I'm messing up my body. That's a challenge. Instead of just jumping to rejection, which is a kind of survival enhancement thing that's built into us. We all have it, and we all do it to some degree. Just like plants, coconuts have shells. Have big old husk and then the shell. You know, my chaya plant has to be, the leaves have to be cooked before it can be eaten. 10 times more nutritious than spinach, but if you can't eat it, it's poisonous until it's cooked. Like, oh, yeah. And you take the peel off a banana before you eat a banana. Oh, yeah. And you go, I get it. Those things are designed for protection. We have our immune system, we have skin, we have hair, we have eyelids, we have all kinds of things that are designed for our protection. And we don't need to jump into rejection as a first order of business. We can observe, learn, and adjust. And that means we will grow mentally and every other way. I use an energy model of life. This is my grandiose phrase for it. Maybe there's a better phrase, so I have to look for that. Maybe I can draw it in magnetically. But it involves this: energy acquisition, energy preservation, energy translation, energy expression, energy release, and closure. I wanted to know a few years back, what is it we're doing with energy? And then I started to recognize those steps, if you will. We acquire energy. We take, we grab, we suckle, we hold on, we drink, we eat, we breathe, and we preserve it. Little kids will fight other kids for toys. And, no, I'm not sharing. And you see that politically, even today with adults. I don't want to share. I only have billions. I can't afford that you would make more than $7.75 an hour. Come on. And when you start looking at that, you go, I know how I behave in these different areas. If I'm too vulnerable to acquire, then we're going to sit at the table of life, this buffet table, and not reach for things. What will the neighbors say? Oh, what if somebody else wants it? Maybe there's somebody starving in another part of the world. I better not take anything. And so on. And if you can't protect yourself, we're at a disadvantage. But all you think about is protecting yourself. You're at a disadvantage because you will draw in the threats that we worry about. And you could look at all those steps: acquisition, preservation, translation. If I'm talking about food, that would be digestion. And if I'm talking about mental energy, of course, it's like, I'm getting it, I'm understanding it, I'm practicing it, I'm noodling it out, I'm considering it. And then how we express that and move that energy into the world in our unique way. And then we release what no longer serves us. We have excretion, we sweat, we go to the bathroom, all of this stuff. We exhale. Oh, yeah. We have stuff that doesn't serve us. We can recycle it. And then we need to end up with a sense of closure, a sense of satisfaction for, I did as well as I could do. job well done. And now I can observe, learn, and adjust, of course. I used to watch some of the Star Treks, and I like this. The Borg were right. Resistance is futile. It's futile. It will end up killing us. If we get more and more and more and more resistance, and you hear it in politics now, let's build walls, let's shoot people, let's prison everybody, let's kill them all, that's all that resistance. Let's have a war on fill in the blank. All of that stuff just makes the problem bigger and stronger. Because we attract what we focus on. If we attract more cancer by the war on cancer, like, that's not what I had in mind. More terrorists, oh, that's not what I had in mind with the war on terror. Yeah, well, that's what we got going. People say, well, I'll just make noises with my mouth. I'll say affirmations. We're creative mentally, but it has to be more than just plain words. It's our vibration. It's our vibrational matching to what we want. The mental and emotional worlds have to be combined. For me, one of the things that makes life more predictable is recognizing that the variety of people, that everyone acts in their own self-interest according to their level of awareness. Well, let me tell you, there are cavemen on planet Earth. There are saints on planet Earth. There are predators on planet Earth. And there are prey on planet Earth. And there are people, every kind in between those characterizations. Now it's a question of, where are we as individuals? And let's grow out of where we are to a higher level mental processing capability so we can grow. I mean, that's the name of the game. If we're going to live, I think we need to grow. And growing mentally, our level of awareness, bringing it up higher and higher and higher, is the name of this game. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. I've modified it and pluralized it, and I include my wife Marianne in it as the epitome of love that I've seen manifested in physical form. Father, Mother, Life, Marianne, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves, our lives, our family, and our friends into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.